Hi everyone, welcome to Intuitive Awakening. I hope you all are doing well wherever you're at in the world. Today we're going to discuss a mystical text that you're most likely familiar with. If you haven't read it, you've certainly probably heard of it, and it is called the Pistis Sophia. But before we begin, I do want to frame this episode carefully because the Pistis Sophia, it's often confused with other Gnostic texts that do involve Sophia, this divine feminine figure associated with wisdom. Many people today, they first encounter Sophia through the dramatic myths that are found in texts like number one, the Apocryphon of John, number two, the Hypostasis of the Archons, and number three, on the origin of the world. And I want to say right now, if you are interested in reading these, I do recommend these. You can find them online for free as a PDF on the Nag Hammadi Library. So if you're interested in Gnosticism, this is highly recommended. So to talk to you a little bit about Sophia from the viewpoint of these three texts, in these stories in particular, Sophia exists within the Pleroma. You'll hear this time and time again. It is the divine fullness among these luminous divine emanations that are called either aeons or eons, however you pronounce it. At some point, Sophia decides to act independently. So this is wisdom again, so don't forget that. Sophia acts independently or outside the harmonious structure of the divine realms. Now, depending on the version of the myth that you read, she attempts to generate or create without her consort, or she at least seeks to know the unknowable through the unknowable source directly. And from this imbalance emerges a being known as Yaldabaoth. Now, Yaldabaoth becomes what many scholars end up calling the Demiurge, or this flawed creator figure. He's ignorant of the higher realms. He believes himself to be the only god. He fashions the material cosmos while separated from this true divine fullness. And this is where that famous declaration appears, like, I am God and there's no other beside me. But in the Gnostic interpretation, the statement is not like the ultimate truth. It's supposed to represent cosmic ignorance. The Archons, who are the ruling powers and they're associated with Yaldabaoth, they help structure a world that's shaped by limitation, spiritual amnesia, fear, domination, and illusion. Human beings, however, they contain a hidden divine spark that originates from the Pleroma itself, and salvation, from the Gnostic viewpoint, comes through gnosis, or what's called, like what we call today, it's like awakening, or through remembrance, or through realizing that one's deepest identity transcends the structures imprisoning our consciousness. So those texts, especially the Hypostasis of the Archons and On the Origin of the World, they're heavily focused on cosmology. They're trying to explain the following. Number one, how did consciousness become trapped? Number two, why does the world feel fractured? Number three, why does suffering exist? Number four, why do human beings feel alienated from divine fullness? So these are supposed to be these mythic creation stories or these large-scale cosmic dramas. And you'll also find these esoteric reinterpretations of Genesis as well. All of this to say is that the Pistis Sophia is different from this. Okay, so I wanted to say this at the outset because I think many people make the assumption that it's all the same narrative, and it is not. The Pistis Sophia, it's not primarily concerned with how the cosmos became fractured. It's really concerned with what happens after the fragmentation. So it's not mainly about the creation of the material universe. Rather, it's more so about the restoration of consciousness. So it's quite different. Instead of focusing on Yaldabaoth creating the cosmos, the Pistis Sophia centers Sophia herself. It centers her story of descent, of her suffering, of her cries for help, of her repeated repentances, and even her gradual restoration. So the Pistis Sophia is not really this creation myth. It's more kind of this mystical drama of healing, of awakening, ascent, and then transformation. And one of the most important differences here in this story altogether is the role that Christ plays. So, in the Pistis Sophia, the risen Christ becomes this cosmic revealer of the mysteries. This isn't, you know, the teacher that we find from the Sermon on the Mount. And this isn't really the historical ministry of Jesus walking through Galilee either. This is more so the resurrected Christ who becomes this cosmic instructor, right? He's this luminous revealer who's moving all throughout the heavenly realms. I would also say for the Pistis Sophia that you can look at Christ as a guide who's explaining the structure of the universe. He also explains the hierarchies of spiritual powers, the ascent of the souls, the mysteries of consciousness, and the path toward liberation. So the text itself presents these teachings as occurring after the resurrection. In the opening of the Pistis Sophia, so now we're going to talk about it, Christ has already risen and he's spent 11 years speaking secretly with his disciples. 11 years. So imagine that, right? The disciples are no longer simply following, you know, a wandering teacher through the villages. They're sitting with this resurrected Christ who is receiving hidden teachings about the cosmos itself. And then according to the text, you know, years after his resurrection, Christ ascends into these immense regions of light. When he returns, he appears to them as transformed, right? In this overwhelming type of radiance. And the disciples are terrified. You'll read that the heavens begin to tremble and the cosmic powers are also shaking. And from that moment forward, the Pistis Sophia unfolds as this vast mystical revelation. Christ begins teaching the disciples about the higher realms, about the aeons or eons, the mysteries, the orders of light, the archons, the soul's ascent, and the story of Sophia, right? So this is more so a teaching of, I would say, a visionary cosmology, or even some form of mystical theology. And historically, you know, the text, I think it likely emerged between the 3rd and 4th century CE, though it does contain these older layers of tradition. The surviving manuscript was preserved in Coptic, an Egyptian language using Greek characters, and eventually became part of what is known as the Askew Codex. The codex itself was purchased in the 18th century by, of course, the British Museum from a London physician and a collector named Anthony Askew, which is why scholars still refer to it as the Askew Codex today. So unlike the Nag Hammadi text discovered in Egypt in 1945, the Pistis Sophia had already been known to European scholars for centuries because of this earlier manuscript discovery. However, the Nag Hammadi discovery dramatically expanded scholarly understanding of Gnostic traditions overall. So near the Egyptian town of Nag Hammadi in 1945, a cache of ancient codices were discovered buried in a jar, and I think we're all familiar with this story. A number of texts were recovered, and some of these include the Apocryphon of John, the Hypostasis of the Archons on the Origin of the World, the Gospel of Thomas as well, which I think is an important read, and many other mystical writings. That discovery transformed our understanding of early Christianity and Gnosticism, because suddenly, you know, scholars begin to realize that there wasn't one singular form of early Christianity. There were many competing visions of spirituality, salvation, revelation, and even divine reality. And amongst them, one person or one character that you see appear time and time again is Sophia. However, throughout the texts, her role evolves. So in earlier Sethian traditions, Sophia often functions as this catalyst for cosmic rupture. In the Pistis Sophia, she becomes this image of the soul moving through suffering towards restoration. And I think this distinction is important because the Pistis Sophia is ultimately concerned with healing consciousness. So today we are going to do our best to discuss one of the most, I think, mysterious, probably misunderstood, and a profound spiritual text that survives from the ancient world. And you have to remember that this text was hidden for centuries. It speaks of divine wisdom, descending into darkness, but it also speaks of repentance, suffering, illusion, liberation, cosmic powers, and then the long way back into the light. So let's talk about the Pistis Sophia. And again, I want to say from the beginning that this text is a map of consciousness, right? It's kind of this vision of the soul. It's a revelation about what it is to be fragmented, having that spiritual amnesia, and what it means to awaken. So whether you approach this text as mythology or some form of esoteric cosmology, or even personally as this genuine revelation, it contains something extraordinarily relevant for us today, because the story of the Pistis Sophia is ultimately the story of what happens when consciousness loses its connection to its source. It's the story of what happens when we chase false light, or when we become trapped in systems that drain us, and when we forget our divine origin, and when we choose to descend into fear, into confusion, or shame, addiction, or even spiritual exhaustion. But the best part of this is that it's a story of return. And I think that's why it matters, because the ancient Gnostics, they were trying to answer a question that many of us still carry today. And there's various questions, right? You know, why does suffering exist? Why do human beings repeatedly become trapped in illusion? Why do we forget our true selves? And how do we come back into wholeness? So our goal is to explore what the Pistis Sophia actually is, who Sophia is, why she falls, what the powers and the archons actually do represent, what repentance means, at least in this text, and why Sophia may be one of the most important spiritual archetypes for our time. So let's get started. The Pistis Sophia is part of a larger body of texts that are often associated with Gnosticism, and Gnosticism can be a complicated term. It does refer to various spiritual movements in the first few centuries of the Common Era that emphasize this direct spiritual knowledge, or gnosis, right, as the path to liberation. And gnosis was an experiential way of knowing, so it didn't mean just intellectual knowledge, right? It was this direct awakening and remembrance of your own divine origin. Many Gnostic traditions, they believe that human beings contain this divine spark, but they live trapped within these systems of illusion, ignorance, and spiritual sleep. The text itself, it presents teachings that are given by the risen Christ to his disciples after the resurrection, but unlike the more familiar canonical gospels, this isn't focused primarily on morality, social teachings, or even historical narratives, right? Again, this is more so like mystical cosmology, or it's initiatory, and at the center of it all is really Sophia, which means wisdom, right? So Sophia is not supposed to be this abstract idea of wisdom. She is the living wisdom. She is the cosmic wisdom. And she is, of course, from our understanding, the divine feminine intelligence. Across many Gnostic systems, Sophia represents this profound principle within reality itself. She's often connected to the soul, to consciousness, creation, intuition, and the longing to reunite with divine fullness. In some traditions, she becomes the source of cosmic rupture, and others, she is the wounded aspect of divine consciousness seeking restoration. And in the Pistis Sophia specifically, we encounter Sophia who's in crisis. We encounter her after the fall, and this is important because unlike many later religious systems that portray spiritual failure as this simple moral corruption, the Pistis Sophia portrays spiritual descent as some form of entanglement, right? Sophia becomes trapped. She's misled, she's drained, disoriented, and she is deceived by false light. And this image, I think, can be quite modern for us, because how many people today are chasing false light, or false promises, false identities, false spirituality, false power, false success, on and on and on. And how many people are exhausted because they pursued things they believed would save them, right? Whether it's achievement, validation, recognition, material accumulation, perfection, etc. The story of Sophia is not ancient in the sense of being irrelevant. It's ancient in the sense that human consciousness has always wrestled with illusion. So, let's start. In the Pistis Sophia, Sophia dwells in the higher realms. She exists amongst divine emanations and luminous powers. But then she sees a light. It's a lower light, a distorted light. And believing it to be the true divine fullness, she moves towards it. this becomes the beginning of her descent. Now, symbolically, we can look at this as being incredibly important. Sophia doesn't fall because she's evil. She falls because her discernment becomes distorted. She mistakes the lesser light for ultimate reality. And honestly, this is one of the deepest spiritual dangers all of us face. One of the hardest lessons, I think, in spiritual development is learning the difference between illumination and seduction. Sophia descends because she becomes captivated. And once she descends, hostile powers begin attacking her. So these hostile powers are traditionally known as the Archons. You see that in the other three texts that I mentioned, but you also see it here in the Pista Sophia. Now, historically, these Archons in Gnostic literature, they are the cosmic rulers. They were associated with ignorance, control, limitation, and spiritual blindness. But if we look at this from a psychological standpoint, we can understand them as forces that imprison our consciousness. So this can show up as fear, shame, addiction, narcissism, violence, trauma, compulsion, internalized oppression, your false beliefs, or all to say, systems that disconnect human beings from their own inner knowing. So the Archons, they're not just simply these external villains. They are the structures of consciousness. And this is why I think the Pista Sophia remains so relevant, because modern people today, all of us today, we live amongst systems that we can call archonic, systems that are constantly trying to shape our desires, shape our identity, our perception, our attention, shape our worth, right? Because we live inside these economies of distraction. We live inside these algorithms that are designed to capture our consciousness, or we live inside systems that often profit from our insecurity. And the result is that many people feel spiritually fragmented. They lose the connection to their deeper self. And this is exactly Sophia's condition. She becomes trapped in the chaos. She loses power, her light diminishes, and then she cries out. So this is where the text, I think, becomes a little bit more emotional. Much of the Pista Sophia consists of Sophia's repentances. Now, the word repentance has accumulated a lot of baggage in religious culture. People often hear it as shame or self-condemnation or moral humiliation. But in the deeper mystical sense, repentance means reorientation. It's some sort of turning or returning or coming back into alignment. Sophia's repentances are not supposed to be seen as a form of groveling. It's supposed to be looked at as an awakening or awakenings. She begins to recognize where she is, and then she begins to perceive the forces that are operating around her, and then she begins to call upon higher light, right? And this is important because liberation begins when illusion itself is seen clearly, not when we ourselves become perfect or when we become spiritually impressive, or when we can find a way to erase every flaw. Liberation begins when consciousness becomes honest. When we finally say, I don't know, I am suffering, or I'm exhausted, or I need help, or I'm trapped in certain patterns, so on and so forth, right? It's that moment of recognition that is sacred in itself. In many spiritual traditions, awakening is usually portrayed as some form of transcendent bliss, but often awakenings, they begin with some form of disillusionment. Maybe you realize the things that you thought would save you are not going to be able to save you, or maybe you realize that your identity was constructed around having to survive, or perhaps your coping mechanisms are what's actually harming you. Or maybe you realize that your ego cannot carry the weight of your own soul. Sophia's cries become the cries of the human soul itself, right? So what happens after this is that Sophia is not abandoned. Help actually comes. Light descends towards her. In the text, Christ is the one who assists Sophia. These higher powers, they intervene, and then the restoration itself begins. But the restoration is gradual. Healing, of course, is rarely instantaneous, right? So Sophia repeatedly rises, she repeatedly falls, and she gains insight and then struggles again, and she calls for help again and again, right? This is the reality of transformation, or at least what it looks like. People often imagine spiritual awakening as this permanent peak state, but real transformation is going to be cyclical, right? You have breakthroughs, you have grief, clarity, there's resistance, and then expansion, and then the old patterns, of course, return, right? And then maybe there's some deeper wisdom emerges. Sophia's journey, it validates this non-linear nature of healing. And I do think, you know, modern spirituality, it often creates these impossible expectations because people believe they should already be healed. They should already be peaceful, abundant, enlightened. And when they continue struggling, they start to feel very ashamed. But the piece de Sophia presents a soul that's moving through these layers of restoration, right? It's the journey itself that is what is sacred here. So now I kind of want to speak more deeply about Sophia as this feminine archetype, because she is not simply this passive victim in this story. Sophia is consciousness itself undergoing transformation. And across history, many women and many marginalized people generally have resonated profoundly with Sophia because she reflects what happens when intuitive wisdom becomes exiled. Right? So patriarchal systems, they often distrust embodied knowing. They distrust intuition, emotional intelligence, relational wisdom, and even mystery. And Sophia represents a form of knowing that can't be fully controlled by these rigid systems. But there's something I think even deeper happening here. Sophia is not merely this wounded feminine energy. She is the divine wisdom that's passing through fragmentation without losing her essential nature. And I think this is quite powerful because many people, they secretly believe that suffering has ruined them. They believe the trauma has destroyed their sacredness. They believe that their mistakes have erased their worth. And they believe that grief has diminished their own divinity. But Sophia descends into chaos and still remains Sophia. The light, yes, it becomes obscured through the journey, but it's not annihilated. And I think this is one of the central insights of this type of mystical spirituality. The divine spark within a human being, it can become buried. It can become conditioned, traumatized, fragmented, forgotten, but it can never be destroyed. And for many people, healing begins when they stop seeing themselves as fundamentally broken, right? You're going to be wounded. You're going to be exhausted, disassociated, spiritually numb, and you might feel disconnected from meaning, but your deeper self is always still going to be there. And your work, what the work looks like, it really entails remembering. This is why Gnostic spirituality often centers remembrance as key. And this isn't because knowledge is hidden from us by accident. It's because consciousness forgets itself, I think, over and over and over, and under pressure. And honestly, our life today, modern life, it creates enormous pressures towards forgetting, right? Forgetting your silence, forgetting embodiment, forgetting contemplation, forgetting the soul, even forgetting community, or forgetting wonder. People become consumed by productivity and performance. And one of the tragedies of, I think, our contemporary culture is that many people no longer know how to listen inwardly. And so it's really Sophia who steps forward to invite us to return to do that. Now, there's another dimension of the piece to Sophia that I think deserves attention as well. And this is that the cosmos in this text is very complex and layered. It's filled with realms, powers, aeons, and these hierarchies. So today it can seem really bizarre, but symbolic cosmology, it was the language that the ancient mystics used to describe these states of consciousness, right? The ascent through the realms, it's supposed to mirror the ascent of awareness. So the further that Sophia rises, the more distortion begins to fall away. And psychologically, this is supposed to resemble like inner integration. So at first, we are identified completely with fear or conditioning and these reactive patterns that we have, but gradually, consciousness becomes capable of witnessing itself. You begin noticing your patterns instead of becoming consumed by them. you begin discerning manipulation. You might sense what is actually life-giving, or maybe you even begin to reclaim your own agency. And I think the most important thing is that you begin to tolerate truth, because that's a major spiritual shift, because truth is the only thing that can dismantle your illusions. It dismantles these false identities, fantasies, these egoic narratives that people carry. And this is scary for some of us. You know, sometimes people resist awakening because we fear what the transformation, what it requires of us. It's not because, you know, people lack intelligence. It's because the transformation is going to ask a lot. Sophia's cries, returning to the text, her cries are painful because awakening often involves mourning. You mourn who you thought you were. You mourn the years lost living in an unconscious way. You mourn relationships that were built on these false foundations. You mourn systems that harmed you. But mourning in itself is not a failure. It's part of the restoration. So I think there's something else that we should talk about within the Pistּ Sophia, and that the text repeatedly emphasizes that salvation involves inner transformation, not blind obedience, right? And I think that this is important to mention, especially coming from the ancient world. Many Gnostic traditions, they challenged these rigid religious authority structures. They emphasized direct experience of the divine. And while Gnosticism itself was diverse and it wasn't always unified, there is a recurring theme. And this is that external systems cannot substitute your inner awakening. It cannot be a substitute for that inner awakening. This doesn't mean that community is unnecessary, or that teachers are unnecessary, or that your traditions are meaningless. But it does mean that none of the institutions can awaken you for you. There's no guru who can do your consciousness work. There's no ideology that can replace your self-examination. And there is, you know, no ritual that you can do that can help you bypass your own personal honesty. Sophia has to awaken. And I think, again, this is relevant for us today because many people are searching for certainty. They want someone else to tell them who they are, what to believe, how to live, how to heal. But I think that authentic spiritual maturation requires developing discernment, right? And it's important to distinguish discernment from cynicism, right? I think discernment is an act of listening. Cynicism necessarily is not. Discernment also, it observes, it tests, it questions, importantly. And in the text, Sophia learns discernment through her suffering. And while suffering is never something that we need to romanticize in any type of way, it is true that pain often strips us of our illusions. And people become more honest, I think, after they have some moment of profound grief, moment of profound loss or collapse, right? Hopefully there is more compassion after having survived your own personal darkness. It's not always automatic, right? But there is a potential for it. So I think here the question becomes whether suffering hardens your consciousness or if it deepens your consciousness. And when we look to Sophia, Sophia is the one who chooses to return. All right, so now I want to shift again. This text is not extremely long, but there's a lot going on in this text, so I'm trying to keep this pretty consistent. But I do want to speak briefly about the divine feminine dimension here, because Sophia is one of the most influential feminine spiritual figures in Western mystical history. And I think, you know, we see her everywhere. We see her in mystical poetry, in feminine spirituality. We see her in esoteric Christianity. We even see her in Christian mysticism and Jewish mysticism, right? Sophia becomes this image of sacred wisdom that's hidden within the world. And many people today feel hungry for this dimension of spirituality. Not a form of spirituality that's rooted solely in domination, fear, dogma, or even hierarchy, but it's more rooted in living wisdom, or we can call it embodied wisdom, or, I don't know, compassionate or transformative wisdom. And Sophia reminds us that wisdom isn't cold. Wisdom suffers. Wisdom longs, it weeps, it descends, but ultimately it transforms and it returns. And that's the most important thing. I want to be careful about not idealizing Gnosticism simplistically. Some forms of Gnosticism or Gnostic thought, it became deeply dualistic, portraying matter itself as inherently corrupt. And historically, I think that can create problems, because I do think that the body matters, the earth matters, relationships matter. So the goal is not rejecting human existence. The deeper insight is recognizing how unconsciousness distorts experience. Or in other words, the problem is not existence itself. The problem is alienation from your being, right? A healthy spiritual path shouldn't sever us from humanity. It should deepen our humanity. And real awakening doesn't make us less compassionate people or less grounded or less emotionally honest. It should make us more capable of love and more capable of integrity as well. Sophia's restoration isn't this escape from consciousness, right? It's again, the story of restoration of consciousness. And I think perhaps that's one of the greatest messages that's hidden inside this text. Human beings don't need more distraction. They need remembrance. They need practices that reconnect them with their inner life, whether it comes through silence or reflection or community or sacred imagination. The modern world today is very good at stimulating our attention, but it's not good at nourishing our consciousness. And it's Sophia that calls us back towards this, right? Towards listening to our inner selves, towards having some discernment and having that sacred honesty as well. And I think potentially now this is why so many people are rediscovering these ancient texts today. I think it's because beneath all of our technological advancement, beneath our social acceleration, beneath, you know, endless information, many people still feel very spiritually starved. They're searching, you know, for some sort of pathway towards integration, or they're searching for meaning that's deeper than consumption. The Piece de Sophia, I think it offers this some sort of mythic language for this condition, because it tells us that, number one, you're not alone in your descent. You are not irredeemable because you became lost, that your confusion doesn't erase your essence, and that your suffering is not proof of abandonment, even though many people believe it is. And perhaps, and maybe most importantly, is that return is always possible, but it's not possible through perfection or becoming superhuman or bypassing your pain, but through awakening and becoming conscious and just really trying to move, you know, truthfully through it. So before we close, I want to draw together some of the deepest teachings that I think are running beneath the Piece de Sophia, because this text is not merely describing the strange cosmological systems or these mystical hierarchies. It's really attempting to transform your consciousness. And I think some of the teachings that come through from this risen Christ or the resurrected Christ, it can really apply to us in our modern lives today. So number one, one of the clearest messages in the Piece de Sophia is that no soul is abandoned. In the story, Sophia doesn't, you know, she doesn't descend once and immediately become restored. She struggles repeatedly. She loses her strength. She becomes confused and she cries out again and again, and each time help continues coming, right? I think this is important because many people today, they secretly believe that spiritual growth should make them permanently immune to suffering. They believe that if I were truly healed, I would never struggle, or if I were really spiritual, I would never feel lost, or maybe if I were truly awakened, I would never fall back into fear. But the Piece de Sophia, it does represent transformation, again, as being very cyclical. It's a layered experience. The soul becomes liberated, not because it never falls, but because it continues turning towards truth again and again and again, right? And that's a very deeply compassionate spiritual vision. Another central teaching that I think emerges through Sophia's original descent, she mistakes a lesser light for true light. This is one of the biggest warnings of the text, that not all light is true light. And honestly, this may be one of the most relevant teachings for us today, because people are constantly surrounded by false lights, whether it's performative spirituality, charisma that you see, but there's no wisdom to it. Maybe validation even mistaken for love, or consumption mistaken for fulfillment, or so on and so forth, right? Many things appear luminous, but they're quietly draining your soul, and they're false. The Pistis Sophia, it teaches discernment, right? Discernment, discernment, discernment. The ability to sense whether something actually leads towards wholeness, integrity, compassion, and even a deeper consciousness. Sophia's suffering begins when her discernment, it collapses. Her restoration begins when her perception becomes clear. And I think another closely connected major teaching is that liberation begins with honest self-awareness. Sophia's repentances, they're not about her being humiliated, but it is about recognition, because she begins healing when she sees clearly. She recognizes where she is, the forces that are influencing her, her own personal exhaustion, and her longing for restoration. And I think psychologically, this is how transformation usually begins for us human beings too. Healing often starts the moment that your illusions start to break. When someone finally admits again that I'm suffering, this pattern is harming me, I've abandoned my deeper self, I have built my identity all around fear. The Pistis Sophia repeatedly shows us that awakening begins with truthful seeing. And beneath all of this lies perhaps, I think, the most hopeful teaching in the entire text, is that the divine spark within the human being, it can become obscured, but it can never be destroyed. Again, Sophia descends into chaos, her light becomes diminished. Hostile powers begin to oppress her, but her essence remains, it will always remain. And that's the great mystical insight coming from the Gnostic tradition, I would say, that human beings, they can become conditioned, we're very good at that. We are traumatized, we're fragmented, time and time again, we're spiritually numb, and we're looking for meaning. But always, regardless, the deeper self still persists. It persists and it's present, even beneath all that fragmentation. The task always becomes to remember time and time again. That's why Gnosis is important, right? We're not looking at Gnosis as some form of intellectual superiority, right? It's not some secret information that only a few, you know, people are allowed to have access to. It's supposed to be awakening. It's supposed to be remembering your deeper self beneath all of the illusion. And I think finally, this text, it presents a radically different image of spiritual authority than many people are used to. The risen Christ in this text isn't demanding obedience. What he's doing is just revealing mysteries. He's answering questions. He's guiding people. He's explaining, and he helps souls understand the structure of their own personal conditioning. And again, the disciples ask questions, and Christ responds by expanding their perception, which is important because the goal of the text is not blind submission. The goal, again, is your awakened consciousness. And I think perhaps one of the reasons that a book like this or a text like this continues to speak to us today is, you know, to help us awaken our own consciousness, because many people are exhausted by these systems that are built on fear, shame, domination. The Pistis Sophia, instead, it presents spiritual awakening as a movement towards understanding and a movement towards your own discernment, your own inner transformation, and then consciously participating in divine reality. It's asking us not to just merely believe, but to actually awaken. Everyone, I hope this was helpful for you today, and thank you for joining me on this journey into the Pistis Sophia. Again, you can find this online for free as a PDF. If you go to, I believe it's the Nag Hammadi Library, it contains, or the Internet Archives, it contains free copies of this text along with the other texts that I mentioned today if you're interested in learning more about Gnosticism. All right, everybody, take care of yourselves and have a good week ahead. Bye-bye.